Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
From Fangoria comes Colors of the Dark, episode 100, starring Dr. Rebecca McKendry. Is that what
and
you want?
And Elric Cain.
and me. I'm already here. They already know I'm here.
So, welcome to episode 100, which honestly kind of snuck up on us. Like, we realized like 2 weeks ago that it was going to be episode 100. And then we had these really quick ideas. We should do a live show. We should do connect it to a movie screening. And then we realized we were never going to get anything.
When you got sick, I had something simmering.
I got sick.
You were sick. And so yeah. I was worried you were going to stay sick. So I was like, we better wait. But we'll do something someday after summer.
I'm going to stay sick forever with that cholera.
I thought it was over. I thought it was over. To be honest, I already had like guest hosts. Host ideas for episode 100. I get a new co-host from here on, and so
that's the way it's gonna roll. Becca's down for the
get into my people slipping into my DMs with their audition tapes for podcast hosts. But that's her.
She's got a stomach bug. It's over, yeah. And we're done. No, somehow I did muster through. Thank you for that. But then we suddenly were like, oh shit, it's here. So what we're going to do is we have a really exciting guest that we couldn't pass up anyway for tonight's episode. And then after we always take our break during June, July. When we come back, we'll be stopping at episode 103. And then when we come back from break for episode 104, we're doing something special because then we got a couple months to figure it out. So yeah,
mess with the format. We might turn the show. I feel like after 100, it's 100 episodes here, but it's also times 10 years of other horror
13.
Podcasts.
Yes. I don't want to destroy that for you. It's 13.
Well, I'm looking at our Rondo Award, which I'm holding in my hand right this second for Killer POV is from 2015. And right now it is 2025 and we have a nomination that by the time this episode, it might be the last week of voting. Not saying we need to, vote for whatever you want, but it is pretty crazy to think that alone is a decade. We started other shows prior to that, but
It's
pretty bonkers to think that you can talk about this much horror and not get bored. I never get bored. I get bored of format.
I'll get bored
and want to change stuff, but like the discoveries and the deep cuts, never going to get bored of older horror movies. New ones, it goes up and down with what's coming out. You can't really.
Get bored watching
watching it. It gets harder to talk about it sometimes because you don't want to be negative to things you don't like too much, but then on the stuff it just gets harder to,
I don't really talk. So that I will say is the thing like that, and this isn't just for this show. It's something that I've battled since back Killer POV to Shockwaves to now is I don't like destroying horror films. So if there is something that I really don't like, even if I spent the 2 hours watching it, I won't talk about it on the show because I don't want to, what's the point of that? You want to come on and celebrate horror. You want to expose people to amazing films and get them to go watch them. And if I'm coming on to tell you not to watch something, you might not feel the same way I do. We always, it might be your Microwave Massacre.
Yeah, sometimes I'm with you. And sometimes I like to I have one this week that I can't say I liked. But in the same token, I think sometimes it is still worth mentioning it. But I agree not to destroy it, though, because it's more like because somebody is looking for that movie. And if you bring it up on a show like this, they might look for it and find it. And they might have not known it was out at all. Because I'm always surprised we do pay attention to this stuff. But there's a lot of people who just aren't looking, and then suddenly they're like, wait, that's out? I had no idea that was out. And so I will talk about one of those this week because
I will too, which I'm excited about. But yeah, so when you come back at episode 104, we might have changed the entire format. We're running a bunch of different ideas right now of how to mix it up and get weird, because after 100 episodes, you got to do that shit.
When we do finally retire, though, I like the idea that with this show, at least, it would be fun to replace ourselves, like to do a whole thing where we do like a season where we're also going to be
We
searching for
cast
yeah, we
ourselves.
recast who's going to take the show over and they continue it. I thought that would be actually quite fun. But you know, we're not there yet, so we're still
Definitely not.
interested. Speaking of which, as long as movies are still fun, we went to
Well,
one of them, remember?
we went to a bunch of
Yeah.
them, but I'm going to start with someone who is retiring,
Oh.
which just because it was such a bittersweet event. And Alric, unfortunately, didn't get to
Lives
go
far
there because
away.
he had a, no, you had a family event that
Oh, okay,
day.
yeah.
But Dark Delicacies, which is kind of the original Burbank horror store that's been there for a really long time, is closing. And Dark Dells, for
Closing
those
or
who are not,
closed? Did it close already?
it's
Yeah, the
closed.
day
Yeah,
you were
it's
there was the
closed.
closed day, yeah.
That was the last day. They'd actually closed the doors a couple days
Okay.
prior, and then we had the big farewell party for them. And for those people who have not been to Burbank, it's commonly known here as Horror Row because we have so many eclectic little horror shops in a row. It's just this wild little 6-block on conclave of just all of these horror shops. And that all started with Dark Delicacies. Dark Delicacies had been here for a while. And then we got Mystic Museum, and then we got Creature Features, and then we got a video store, and then we got Blast from the Past and Vulture Culture. And we now have a horror bodega. It's literally an entire horror-themed bodega. And there's more coming. Like you can see where different horror shops are opening. And so it really is kind of just this weird little horror, like mini mall of Los Angeles. And so seeing kind of the one who started all that retire is, it was very bittersweet. We were very happy for Dell and Sue that they kind of get to move into the next chapter of their lives and, get a break. But
But
at
for
the
the
same
horror
time,
community,
it's
it
great.
was, it's like, it sounds like it's a bookstore. It's a bookstore, but the amount of DVD, Blu-ray signing, book launches, guests, I mean,
Clothing,
yeah.
housewares.
But
Yeah,
it
it
really
was
was a
just.
place where people would go to promote their film and have people meet together. I mean, you've done it multiple times. It's just
Yeah.
that was something that was quite unique, I think, to have in a bookstore like that. And yeah, it's always irreplaceable when a place like that closes.
So just wanted to send some love to them. It will be missed. So with that, we went to movies, but we also went to the Minecraft
Oh
movie.
yeah, we didn't go together, but
Yeah.
we did Minecraft. But I don't know if I'm going to talk about Minecraft here. Chicken Jockey.
Chicken
All I've
Jockey,
been seeing
yeah,
is those
there's.
crazy videos where everyone like destroys the room. I don't know if you've seen them, but people are having screenings where they throw all the
Oh
popcorn
yeah.
in. And so somebody in one of our groups posted that, and I just wrote, "Do not show these people possession," because I was just imagining milk and blood and gore being thrown everywhere. You could have quite the Subway Chicken Jockey. It would be quite exciting.
It was a weird moment because the audience, when we saw Minecraft, was so engaged. Like the kids were howling and screaming and yelling out stuff. And oh my God, that's Aphmau and the other YouTubers in it. But that Chicken Jockey moment came up and my kids fucking
Well,
lost
it's
it.
like
Like
everyone
it
knew
was
what it
just,
was before it happened, so I
yeah,
didn't
it
really
was
understand it.
memes.
Yeah, I mean,
There
yeah.
was memes floating around about it being part of the movie.
Oh,
And
all right. We don't need to
yeah,
talk about Minecraft because it's not
no
horror.
more, no
The
more
only horror is the
Minecraft.
weird little pig guys. They're fine.
It is a baby zombie. Let's
It
not
is. It
forget what
is.
is riding on that chicken. It's a
I
baby
think it
zombie.
was the best version of what that film could have been, personally. So
100%. Okay.
but it's not for. I would never have seen it by myself, but that's because it's
No.
not my generation. So,
Okay.
but
So
Drop.
we saw two movies together this week, and one of them was Drop.
Yeah, Drop. I mean, look, Drop is so beautifully executed. It's like a big movie where they've built the stage, they built the restaurant. Like, it's kind of exciting. Chris Landon, who is, beat after beat, made very entertaining, very emotionally driven. Like, there's always a great emotional story to almost all his movies, which I always appreciate. I didn't know who Megan Fahey was, and I think her performance in this is like stellar.
You have not White Lotused yet,
I
sir.
haven't. You're actually right. I've missed all the White Lotus so far. I see what's happening by the recaps that people are posting everywhere in my life, especially the new season. But I thought she was really good in this. But the only negative about this movie is that so much is in the trailer that, unlike the other movie we saw where I didn't see
Yeah.
anything, had I gone into this blind, I just think the hook of a story like this, which is you're going on a blind date, you haven't dated for a while, you have a kid at home. You finally go out, and on your date, somebody sends you a message saying you have to kill your date. That alone is a great Hook, you need nothing more. The trailers can stop at that point, and everyone wants to see that movie. When you show the big moment, that a key climactic moment, I'm like, oh, but now what? They're just so much less to explore. And that's not the filmmaker, has nothing to do with the filmmakers. This is marketing, you know?
And this is where I'm kind of like, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall because I really want to know, because it's in the trailer that, it gets huge at the end, that, it is. This really feels like a single location Hitchcock film for 90% of the movie. And that part is great. Girl on a blind date, first time she's meeting a guy, she starts getting airdrop messages from somebody saying that they have taken her kid hostage with pictures. And if she does not kill the guy that she's on a date with, they're going to kill her son. And that's the entire hook. And it's brilliant. And all that is carefully laid out in the trailer. And then the fact that in the last 10 minutes of the movie, the world is going to explode. And that's in there too. But it feels like such a studio note. And that's where I like want to be a fly on the wall and be like, okay, was this originally supposed to be that Hitchcockian thriller that takes place entirely in that area? And then somebody at the end said, well, we need to get big. And that was it. I mean, it still worked, and those scenes were kind of cool. Okay, they had some logic problems, but that said, they were still fun.
Oh no,
Like
they're
already,
exciting to watch.
yeah, they were still
But
fun.
imagine not being in the trailer. Like, had I not seen that, I would have been like a lot more fulfilled. So I think this movie, for people who didn't already have that part spoiled, it's going to be a blast. I haven't actually checked in with how it did. I wasn't paying attention this weekend.
So it did not blow up the box
Yeah, it's a
office.
shame.
And I was reading some of the comments about why it didn't on like Deadline and Box Office Mojo and stuff like that. And a lot of people were just like, I didn't even know this existed. So it's making me question if there was a little bit less marketing about what it was. And even looking at the poster, it does not really tell you what it is. It's just a girl staring into a phone. Like that's all we
Right. And
get.
we are at a, and here's the thing, it doesn't matter how much you spend on theatrical marketing now. The reason I'm going back to Minecraft, because I just listened to a couple pods about Minecraft, the reason it's so successful, beyond the fact that it's like the next generation's IP, the way we had IP, it is because it's not going to also need the marketing in the traditional way, because it's going to be marketed in with YouTubers talking about it in all these different ways that studios will never fully understand because it's generational. So I think something like Drop is definitely skewering to a slightly older audience member, because it's about a more mature relationship. One of the reasons I actually really like the movie is that it's not being marketed to a 14-year-old. It's being marketed to, and so I that's something I really respect about it. But it's also probably, like you say, why it doesn't catch on, because the traditional models, no matter how much money you throw at it, I think have just changed under our feet so
They
much.
completely have. And this has become really apparent having with some of the more recent Shudder films, that, or even like some of the stuff that I get, with requests to post on Instagram. Like they are pushing for that type of more social-based marketing campaign. And when you can get it, you can get it, but it's hard. And I didn't see Drop pushing for that. I did not see anybody posting
Well,
about it.
Neon is the company that does such a good job with that, because Neon, I think if you go back to Long Legs, a lot of that the way they promote that was
There was
through
a
online
fucking
stuff.
phone line set up for Long Legs. And I can't even remember what it was, but there was something. Yeah, Long Legs had this massive viral campaign. And it there was something where they had like a cell phone
They
thing
had
that
all
you
those
were supposed
clues. Yeah, they had all those
to.
clues. But the point is, they were, it's a non-traditional model, and it completely worked. And so Drop does feel like, instead of showing more, and I think that there's a tendency for all marketing people to go, hey, let's just show more. Like, even having just gone through it, it's like, let's put out more stills. And I'm always like,
We
why?
need trailer
Why put
moments.
more stills out there? You don't need to, because no, and I just think it's from a lack of, there's more creative approaches. But I think this film will have a long, very long shelf life. And probably, to be honest, even though it was really cool to see it on the big screen, this is the kind of movie you drop on Netflix and it becomes the number one movie for quite some
A
time,
hundred
because
percent.
it's just, it would, a lot of people will enjoy watching this at their house. It's just that kind of
It
thing.
reminded me of Blumhouse's The
Yeah, which
Gift.
is great.
That what it
Love The
was
Gift.
called. So
One of my
that was
favorites of all the
another
Blumhouse
one.
movies, actually.
Yeah, it was really tight. Just again, it was like a tight Hitchcockian thriller, like two locations
That
the
one's a little more
entire movie.
disturbing. It's a little
Yeah,
weirder, but
it's weird. But what I remember about that is that the theatrical was kind of okay, but then as soon as it hit VOD, that there was like this whole new audience that discovered it. And so hopefully that will happen. Yeah, drop. This was fun. It was really fun.
It's fun,
so,
and charming leads and very fun, and a good waiter cameo. I did read some posts were like, the scariest thing about this movie is the waiter, because like if you have a waiter like that, it's going to be give you a panic attack having to talk to your
the
waiter.
The waiter was amazing. He was very funny. He's very outgoing.
Yeah. But Chris Landon, doing good work here, I think, and a very fun movie.
And then I'll go ahead and say we also saw Until Dawn together, which we are we went to a press screening of. So we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show with our amazing guest, director David Sandberg.
But that was something that, as we'll talk about, I knew nothing about. You knew more about the game and the world of it. And I went in just blind and just had a lot of fun. So I'm really excited for and just seeing practical effects, like going full tilt boogie is always my jam. So
always
very exciting.
So I'm going to go to what I suspect will make my top 10 list for the year, as everyone had told me.
I called it as your number one movie last year. I said this will be your number one movie whenever you see it.
Whenever I see it. Yeah. And this will definitely make my top 10. This was just one where I sat there the entire time with just a smile plastered to my face, to the degree that at one point my daughter walked in and was like, what are you watching? And why are you smiling so much? As like somebody's exploding on screen.
She'd probably love that film. I would bet.
Oh, she would. Yeah. She needs to rewatch it. No, Mar would absolutely love this. So this is Dead Talent Society. This is a Taiwanese horror film that played every major festival last year and won at a bunch of them. Didn't get the audience award at Fantastic Fest?
I think so. And it got one at Brooklyn. And it was everywhere I was going. I hadn't seen it till the very end. I only saw it when I was in Saskatoon. And I was like, the thing about it, I was watching it going, I am not the target for this. You are. And I thought it was one of the best films of the year. Like, I loved it. And I'm not the target. So to me, that means nailing it. Yeah.
I can't remember the specific awards it won, so if I got that wrong,
I think you're right. I think Fantastic at one time.
I thought it did well there. But so this was cleaning up at all of the horror festivals. And I kept getting people DMing me being like, oh my God, you have to see this. You're absolutely going to love it. And I was expecting it to do this like giant release here because it had gotten such hype in all of those major horror festivals. And then last week, Elric was like, hey, it's on Netflix. And I was like, no, it's not. And
zero
he was like,
marketing.
Oh, no, it's on Netflix. Zero marketing, just dumped to Netflix, this massive film that had cleaned up at all the horror festivals last year. And so dumped to Netflix. I felt like I needed to give it some love. So I rushed to watch it. And you are very right on a couple of things. Yes, it is absolutely amazing. Yes, it will probably be one of my fave films of the year. And this is a very me film. I am the exact audience for this. It is a hyper gory horror comedy. Mm-hmm. And it is very much a horror comedy. Yeah. It does have some scares in it, but it roots itself more in kind of gory shocks of like, I didn't expect that person to explode, than it ever does like, smile-esque terror. Like, you're not jump scaring. It feels like a dead alive amount of lunacy. It is about an afterlife. So we are entered into this afterlife of ghosts. And in this particular afterlife, if you die, you have two choices. You can gradually fade away, and they don't say what happens. Your body just starts to glitch and you gradually fade away. Or you can get a permit to become a haunter. And at that point, you can get your haunter's permit. They give you a specific zone you are meant to haunt. And you want to try to get more notoriety for yourself because the ghosts, every couple of years, they let a couple of ghosts go who are haunting. If you're not meeting quota, if you're not scaring enough people, they'll let you go. So you want to try to get as much notoriety as you can. So the big thing that they always say is like, if you can get caught on video, if you can get posted on YouTube doing something, that's next level, because then people will go try to seek you out. Or if you can get on TikTok or anything like that, or the internet, or create your own urban legend around you. So they're really trying to get this notoriety as ghosts to keep themselves effectively alive in the afterlife. Because if your numbers start dipping, you'll start disappearing. And so we enter into this girl who has recently died very tragically, but not a violent death by any means. She was part of an accident. And she starts glitching out and realizes that she does not just want to fade away. So she decides to become a haunter and tries to get her haunter's permit, you have to get a current haunter to sponsor you. So you have to enter into kind of like a talent competition to do it. But she is just the most awkward, nerdy, just very reserved, shy girl trying to figure out how to be scary in a way that she could never be and just wants to not be awkward. But she gets picked up by a certain group who kind of believes in her, and it's about them trying to be the best, scariest ghosts in all of the land. And what this did so well, it's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious, incredibly well done, heartwarming, dare I say, wholesome, even though it is ridiculously gory. I will say wholesome. As well, because it does, it's got like a One Cut of the Dead vibe to it, where at
Yes,
the
emotionally
end,
you feel like the big
emotionally,
swelling feelings, which is,
oh yeah.
yeah, no, it's really good.
Yeah. No, it's got a One Cut of the Dead kind of like, oh my God, like it makes you feel things. Even as you're watching these incredibly violent death scenes with these ghosts. But the big thing that I love, and somebody had mentioned this on my Instagram as well, is it is, if anything, a big meta statement on all of the different subgenres of Asian horror. Because as they're picking, okay, I'm going to be a haunter. I want to get my haunter's permit. Well, what type of ghost were you going to be? I'm thinking like schoolgirl ghost. Oh, I was going to do like the white dress, long black hair ghost. I was just going to do the ghost that sits on the park bench and doesn't say anything. I want to be a ghost who infects technology. Like you immediately see all of these very specific formulas of Asian horror, and they're really drawing attention to them. And so it was just, this was
Yeah,
joy.
I think
This
it's the
was
best
true
movie
joy.
like this since Cabin in the Woods. Like, and I don't mean it's not as not meta in the same way, but it's in the way that you're talking about. And it's so much more heartfelt than Cabin in the Woods. I think it's really and One Cut of the Dead's a good analogy too because of how you feel at the end. But it's really terrific. I double stamp of approval from us. So seek it out on Netflix. I hope it's
On
not
Netflix
dubbed
now.
on Netflix or does Netflix stuff?
It is
Okay, good.
not. It is in original language, which is great because that made it even funnier. Because you hear there's one particular line that she keeps repeating when she's trying to be a scary ghost. And the way that that line sounds when she first says it and evolves, I think it would have lost a lot had it been
And
dubbed.
there's a character with a mustache who is the coolest guy ever. When
Who
we
is
see his backstory, it's one of my favorite
amazing.
backstory reveals ever about someone's life. I think it's very cool. I
Hilarious.
haven't seen it in a while, but I loved it too. So yeah, it's so funny. So
It's great.
yes, go watch that movie. Okay, so the one I was talking about, hinting at towards earlier, that I can't say I'm a big fan of, but I think it's worth bringing up because it is another weird horror movement that's happening right now, and that is public domain IP ploitation.
Oh my God, yes. I've seen so many of these come up
Last couple
between
years.
Mickey and Popeye and
This,
Winnie the
yeah. So I've
Pooh.
seen the two. I didn't watch the Mickey one. I don't think I will. I watched the two Winnie the Pooh ones, and thought they were both. The first one's a bad movie, but has some interesting moments. The second one's kind of entertaining, to be honest. Like weirdly enough, I think there's some stuff that they were doing quite well. I did watch Popeye the Slayer Man. We had Sarah Nicklin come do trivia, and she was talking about, and she's in the opening scene.
I
Yeah,
love
so she's
Sarah.
not in the bulk of it. She's in the big. It has a good cold open that's actually like kind of straight horror, and she's good in it. But it's one of those movies that's a little frustrating because it's a group of friends sneak into there's an abandoned spinach factory. That at the start there's a couple kills, and there's a couple good gags in here where the first time you see the shadow of somebody who looks like Popeye, I must say we both me and Dick watching, we were both laughed out loud because it is pretty funny. But it is a character haunting the spinach canning factory and killing people because there was some sort of outbreak in the factory itself. Now the and then there are a bunch of teenagers come in here. They're trying to show something about the town. The problem with this one actually isn't like the silliness of the IP. It's which some of that's a kind of fun. It's more like watching people walk around for a long period of the running time because they obviously don't have the budget to go on the docks and in boats. And there's no boat in this movie. There's some maybe one shot of a dock, but I personally found anything with Popeye that doesn't hit the water, I was a little frustrated. I was like, yeah, I think you need to push for that. But it was probably super low budget, so hats off. But it wasn't for me this one. But I do find it. to be an interesting movement that we're seeing. It makes a lot of sense. It's like classic exploitation. You know, it's like a real throwback to the old days of exploitation. These popular things become IP. People jump on them. What I would be curious to see is somebody, and I don't mean this to be, this isn't meant to be a shot so much as, but I'd like to see someone try to make like a really good one out of it instead of just the joke of the idea, if you know what I mean. Like all of them so far have been a joke.
I get that.
Like could you, I don't know if it's even possible to make a straight thing when IP is that well known, but I'm curious. Like I don't know which other ones are coming up, but
Elric wants his A24 version of Winnie the Pooh, the horror story. No, I agree with you. Every single one that has come so far, and there have been a couple, have been joking.
It's a bit
and
of a wink,
I
you know.
Get it. Yeah. But that said, I'd love to see what somebody could, you know, with the Mickey one. I was expecting it to go Bendy and the Ink Machine. Yeah. And I have not seen it yet, but it looks like it did to a degree, but in that jokey sense. And so I think that, you know, there's a seriousness with it that I would love to see. So we are challenging.
Yeah. And I think there's probably going to be a lot more of these in the coming years, because IP is always, because the thing is, let's say this is made for 100 grand, which it probably is, this particular one. I think the Pooh Bear ones are definitely bigger because there's more practical in those. But in this one, let's say it's 100 grand. The fact that it has that title and that poster, it's like old school exploitation. These are doing probably pretty well in the first couple days of VOD release, like, because I think a lot of people are curious, you know? And so I think on that level, it's working the way exploitation films worked, you know? I just wish there were maybe more exploited and more fun in that way. But yes, I'll have to wait for our A24 Pooh Bear movie, but that's okay.
A24 does Pooh
Bear.
Yeah,
I'll keep waiting.
There are so many naked old people in that movie.
Yes. Christopher Robbins is in a retirement home. He's naked.
And he's naked. Why? Yeah. Why Christopher Robbins?
Because they demand it.
Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to take us into a video game. Uh-huh. And I must confess that this is an older video game that it took me a while to circle to. But I had been talking with somebody about the Minecraft movie. And somebody was like, oh my God, have you played Stranded Deep? And I was like, no, what is Stranded Deep? And they were like, it's basically made for you. It's like Minecraft for adults, but aquatic horror. And I was like, because I'm in the middle of writing an aquatic horror book with Lisa Kroger and Elise Wax. And suddenly I was like, I have to play this. And I ended up playing the entire game from start to finish in the course of about 5 days, which is exactly why I had to quit gaming. As I have been getting more back into gaming over the past couple of 6 months, I have suddenly remembered I can't stay up till 4 a.m. with a diet Mountain Dew and a bag of Cheetos and still get up at 8 o'clock in the morning for my class anymore. Like, I'm just not capable of that. So with that, I have to
teach the class now. In the old days, when you're a student in a class, of course you can do that. You can sleep through the class if you have.
I know. Half the class was stoned anyway. So the fact that I was on like 4 hours sleep and coming off a Mountain Dew bender was nothing.
Yeah.
I have to teach the class now. So I have to show up looking presentable and it's all on me. You were very right on that. So it's a big thing. But I've reached that point where I'm suddenly like, with this one, I was still gaming at like 12:30 at night. And then it was suddenly like, oh, fuck, I have to be up at 5:30 for a class. I have to force myself to get off this and go to sleep. But that said, that's on me. Stranded Deep, Minecraft for adults, but aquatic horror. This was released like almost a decade ago, so I'm super late to the party on this, but wanted to mention it because it is currently on PS5, Stream, and Switch. I played the PS5 version. You are in a plane in the opening scene and your plane crashes, and then you swim to the nearest island. And while you are swimming to that nearest island, you realize that this water is completely infested with sharks because they start biting you immediately. And you get to the island and then you are prompted to build a fire. And you realize that you have to start collecting all of these different items from around the island to build things. So you're, you know, 5 sticks, 2 rocks and grass equals campfire. You have to harvest coconuts to drink. So it's basically like that level of Minecraft where you are collecting different materials to craft them into things. But your two goals are survival and escape. But the entire area around the island is completely populated with sharks, giant killer squid, and there's even a megalodon. And that was just like, It was amazing. Because you realize that there's all these other islands that you can see from your island. And so when you start running low on resources, you're like, fuck, I have to get over to that other island to get more coconuts and things like that. But then you see these like giant tentacles whipping around, and it's amazing. So I had a lot of fun with this. Supposedly, this game can be played in the course of one day. Supposedly, if you start, you can finish it within 24 hours. It took me like a week because I was having to force myself to, go to work and lame shit like
Yeah.
that. But this was really fun. So, Stranded Deep.
Stranded Deep. I want a couple last ones I've got are both ones I enjoyed. One I really liked. So a movie I missed it at Brooklyn. Like I must have played a week after this one played. And then when we went down to Fantastic, I missed it by a day. It was called Gazer, and I'd become friendly with the director on Instagram, like back and forth, because we had both been at a certain fest. And so I drove all the way down to Alamo Draft House on Friday to with a buddy to check this out, because this is a true indie. Like I feel like I just came off making a real indie, but this was made for over 2.5 years on weekends when they could get the money, and they would work their day jobs and put more money into the movie. Shot on film, shot on six Super 16, and it's a New Jersey neo-noir, all shot in Jersey. And it just, the Q&A alone just like made me want to leave and
New
go.
Jersey
I want It's
neo-noir
a new
is the
subgenre.
greatest
Yeah, I want it
subgenre
to be a
that we need to
subgenre.
make.
And it just left me, just the way that, because you can't tell. It doesn't feel like, you can't tell that this was shot on weekends over. It just feels like one a continuous story. So, which is remarkable. And I mean, it's super focused. A little European vibe with like Bresson type stuff meets the storyline of Memento very much. With a couple dreamy Cronenberg sequences. It's not really horror. It's always neo-noir, but it has a couple horror dark vibes. But this is a young mother who has a disorder called dyschronometria, which comes from the Oliver Sacks book. It was where they learned about it. It's a struggle to perceive and hold time, and so the character has to use cassette tapes where they record their thoughts to remind themselves of what to focus on certain things. And because of that, she's like living alone and has left her child with the mother of her husband's ex-husband's mother, because she doesn't trust herself, because she could just forget to look after this kid. So she's working menial jobs, losing them, struggling to kind of fit in. It's super focused. The filmmaking style is just everything is kind of square on her visually. And she is the co-star, and she's the star and the co-writer of the movie, Ariella Mastroianni, one of my favorite performances so far this year. Very focused, very, very stripped down. And she basically runs into a girl at like a therapy group who she has recognized from one of the times she just stares at things and stares at people. And she's gazing at this apartment building where she sees something that looks off. Is it a crime? Is it not? And she sees this woman leave. And then she sees this woman again in a therapy group, and they strike up a friendship. And this woman asks her, "Hey, I left my abusive brother, but I need to get my car back. Could you go to the house and get it for me?" So she does something for somebody that obviously leads her into a neo-noir kind of storyline, and it gets, it's very, very minimal, but it's just so fun and exciting to watch something when you feel that handmade quality sometimes, to know that there's ways to make movies that aren't the traditional model. It's like, it's cool. I just thought and also just think it's a very good movie. So definitely there are two people to watch for sure, the director and the co-writer star, Ryan J. Sloan and Ariella Mastroianni. This one is playing in theaters. It's being released by well, it's Metrograph, the New York company that has a theater. So it played out here a couple times. It's probably going to be touring around. And I do think it'd be good big screen because it's shot on Super 16, so it looks really good. So very interesting movie. I'd like to see more neo-noirs getting made, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, it's been a long time since we've had some good ones.
Yeah.
Okay, I have I didn't realize one of the movies that I watched this week, I'll say it, Clown in a Cornfield.
Wait,
I'm
you've
not
watched it
supposed to
already?
talk.
Oh, I haven't. Okay, I'm
So
excited
I
for
watched
this.
it because they sent me a link and I'm not supposed to talk about it yet because I didn't realize there's an
Yeah,
embargo.
I think
So
they
I
want
can't
us to
talk about
also
it.
hold it till,
Yeah.
close.
So I'm just going to say it was fun.
Okay, cool.
But that said, I'm not saying anything else about it. But because of that, I'm short on movies this week because I didn't realize there was an embargo. So instead, I'm going to talk briefly about a book and then we can get back to your
Yeah, I've got
last
one more,
movie.
yeah.
So I read All the Hearts You Eat, which is the
Good
newer
title.
one from Hayley Piper. Isn't that a
I like
great
that title,
title?
yeah.
Yeah, this is the person who wrote The Worm and His Kings, which I really dug from a couple of years ago. That was like super Lovecraftian cosmic horror. It was a novella. And they just knocked it out of the park with that. So I was all in on this. This one is about, it's got four different narrators who are all trans, but the primary one is a woman, trans woman named Ivory, who is living in a northeastern beach tourist town that we kind of get is like a secondary Martha's Vineyard. Like the people who can't afford Martha's Vineyard come to this particular beach. And one morning she is out swimming. And she sees this body being hauled out of the ocean by police, and she realized that like somebody had died and they are getting the body out. And at the same time, she sees the woman whose body they are removing walking along the beach on the other side. There's this island like right across from them called Ghost Cat Island, and she sees the same woman that they are pulling out of the water dead walking along. And so she realizes that she's seen a ghost, and she realizes that this person's name is Cabrina Bright, which I'm assuming is a reference to Poppy Z Bright, but whatever. So Cabrina Bright, and suddenly Ivory becomes obsessed with Cabrina's life, why she saw her ghost, and she starts seeing it everywhere. This is dreamy. It feels like if Jean Roland wrote a book is the only way. I like because it's seaside horror and it's both ghostly and vampiric, and it gets super, super gory. But at the same time, it really preserves that like dreamlike mesmerizing quality of seaside horror. And so it's like gothic seaside horror in this like modern day beach town. It really had like a Daughters of Darkness or a Messiah of Evil feel. With that, it goes on long. It's like 450 pages, but this was really captivating. I wish I had actually read this at a beach because it does just have that dreamy quality of the waves and the way that the town flows and the way that the ocean flows. Like there was just so much Jean Roland about this, and it's really fucking gory. So,
Okay.
yay, all the hearts you eat.
My last one was from the Tribeca Film Festival, and I didn't know about it, but it was last night, and I kind of thought, maybe I'm one film short this week, and I started scrolling, and there was a brand new release, paid like $7 for it, and I'd never heard of it. It was called the ter t crazily terrible slash interesting title is Psychotherapy: The Shallow Tale of a Writer Who Decided to Write About a Serial Killer. And it comes on like bo 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 title, so it's like
I
playful.
don't know if that's a good title
Yeah.
or
No,
not.
it was like playful, but it was like, oh, I don't know if people are going to be able to remember this. Anyway, so the title I wasn't sold on. When I saw the cast, that's why I pushed play, and I won't tell you who they are until I walk you through I think you would this has a dark comedy it with a horror elements, but basically a writer who is full of shit, played by the guy from First Cow, John Magara, who I think is excellent. He's like one of my favorite actors at the moment. He is full of shit because he's spent 4 years trying to write a book about the first Neanderthal, and he probably isn't really writing the book, and his wife knows it, and they're out talking to people, and he's always like, well, I'm writing. He had one hit book, but he's a bit full of shit. And she is played by Britt Lower from Severance, the lead in Severance.
Oh, she is
Yes. And in this,
amazing.
they stylize her in this. So he's completely natural, basically. She is playing this character, is always staring with this crazy intensity. It's like she's in a totally bizarro 80s art house sci-fi movie, but it kind of freaking works. And it's very interesting. So that's how you know you're in a movie that's making like bold choices. Because ultimately, the reason to watch this is has very weird choices in a way that I thought was actually really stylish. Anyway, so they are having problems. She is definitely not feeling their marriage. They come to a red light that night after where she's really frustrated, and she goes, it's green. So he pulls out and a truck almost kills them, and then he realizes it was actually a red light still. So she was saying it to, maybe to get them killed, whatever. Anyway, that night she kind of in the middle of the night, she says, actually, I want a divorce. And he's shocked and doesn't know what to make. He goes out, he gets really drunk, and as he's really drunk, Steve Buscemi walks up to him. Steve Buscemi looking very strange, old hair, glasses, and he basically says, well, I really liked your last book. I thought it was amazing. You should write about me. And he goes, well, why would I do that? He goes, well, I'm a retired serial killer, and I could take you out and show you exactly what I did and how I would look for people and everything I would do, but I don't do it anymore, but I could show you. And the guy doesn't really take him seriously, but it's clear to an audience that he is really a serial killer. And he takes him home to keep talking the conversation alive, and his wife comes downstairs and sees him like, who are you? And he goes, I went and found us a counselor. And he goes, what? And so now Steve Buscemi becomes their marriage counselor, even though, and the trade-off is he will write a book for me if I pretend to be his marriage counselor. And it's so absurd that I should hate this movie. And I was sitting there finding it really funny and really dark and very, very strange. And it kind of culminates in them going out in town to kind of go through the steps of abducting someone, and it just gets kind of madcap towards the end. Steve Buscemi is a joy to watch playing a serial killer, especially one who's not, he's not scary, he's more like, because he's done, he's retired, but he's like the way he goes about it and thinks, and everyone's really funny in it. It's a very under the radar kind of movie, but I gotta say, I think some people will find it very funny. It kind of ends a little, to me, it didn't quite completely close the loop at the ending, unfortunately. But other than that, I actually thought it was really cool. And it was a nice little surprise at the end of my week. But again, I will remind you of the title, Psychotherapy, The Shallow Tale of a Writer Who Decided to Write About a Serial Killer. You know.
That's a you know, that title, again, I don't know if that's the perfect title for this or not, because it does not sound memorable.
Yeah.
But that said, this movie sounds epic.
It's just funny. It's the way it's all presented. Some people would probably really frustrate, and some people would get, you know, like a lot of movies. But I found that its choices were just weird enough to, you could tell it was like an auteur type voice, whoever was making this movie. It wasn't middle of the road in terms of choices. So anyway, I thought it was cool.
I'm in at Steve Buscemi serial.
Exactly.
Killer.
Like, he's really fun. And I really do like Britt Lower. I think she's really good. This is a very weird performance, but it's cool.
Did you watch the second season?
Yeah, I finished it. I watched it in like 2 days. I thought it was great.
So good. Yeah,
really dug
completely.
It.
You know, even this morning, I haven't seen it yet, but I got to run it by you. Somebody gave me something called Last Night in Tremore. It's a Spanish show on Netflix that is apparently like super scary. One of my students told me I had to go watch it. So I'm going to check that one out tonight. So.
Yeah, TV's dangerous because I get sucked.
And then I'm in. This is a limited series. Apparently it's 8 episodes. But you haven't watched The Residence yet. And that's like my favorite thing of the year so far. So work on
year.
That.
By the end of the year. Well, during the summer year. Break.
8 years from now, he's going to be like, so I finally watched The Residence.
That's why our show can last so long. The only reason we last so long is so I can catch up to each other's recommendations.
Well, with that, we did both watch Until Dawn. So let's bring in amazing guest in his second time on the show, David Sandberg. I am so excited to be bringing back our guest. And I say bringing back because he was on Shockwaves. He had listened to Killer POV, joined us on Shockwaves, and we are so excited to be bringing him back. He's just amazing. David Sandberg, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be back. All my Shockwaves t-shirts are all worn out now, so I can't use them anymore.
We're going to send you a Colors of the Dark one. We can send you.
We're sending you a Colors. That's
love
it.
To get I'm some. Yeah.
Literally writing a note right now, and we will get a good place to send
this
it.
Is, we were talking about off air, but this is episode 100. People will know this from the start of the show. But like for us, we were looking at things, doing public screenings and things to kind of celebrate it. But then when this became available, I thought, I love this even more because an intimate talk with somebody who we've, you know, dug your work from the very start, someone who knew about us before they came to Hollywood. It's just a really nice kind of symmetry here. And also the fact that I thought this movie was an absolute blast makes it all the sweeter. So so congrats on a day of press that you've been doing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And congrats on 100 episodes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That's awesome. We just keep on going and, you know, we're going on past this and figuring out what's next and where we go after.
We end on 103.
101.
My plan is 103 is the last episode.
That's nice. When we break for summer. We're planning to come back with something big. So we'll figure that out after that. But I will say, so Elric went in knowing nothing about this. So I'm a gamer. Like back in the 2010s. So I was very familiar with the game, had played through it multiple times because you have to try to figure out how you keep people alive. Like that's the fun of it. But
or how to kill them all.
Or how to kill them all. Oh my gosh, yeah. Like
I've gone into a lot of movies somewhat blind. Like I'll see, you know, the Witch trailer would come on and I would close my eyes during the trailer every time. So I didn't see the images.
Silly about it.
But
literally.
No, but with this, it was kind of remarkable. This is the most blind I've entered a movie maybe ever, outside of if it's a movie no one's ever heard of that comes onto streaming, because we got to see an advanced screening with, you know, kind of press thing, but I hadn't seen a trailer, hadn't seen images. I don't know the video game. I do know a story about the video game, like, because I remember years ago hearing Larry Fessenden and people were.
We had Larry on the show.
Yeah,
for
so
it.
I have, but I didn't. I'm in this story, and I don't even know what the hook is. And for a big movie, that's very rare. And I think that's part of why it was just so fun to me. It reminded me of the same pleasures I get from Final Destination movies, which is like, I kind of know what's coming, but then you keep ratcheting up things. And in this case, there's, you know, bigger, unique twist to what you're even facing. So you have to put now anyone who's watched the trailer already knows 10 times more than me, but I like, you know, I see a masked killer and I'm like, oh, that's the killer. And then something else happens. And I'm like, oh, I'm in. Like, so yeah, very different.
I'm always envious of test audiences because that's how they see movies. They know absolutely nothing about it. And like that is the best way to see the movie, where you're just along for the ride and discovering everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So had you played the game like back when that came out a couple of years ago?
I actually hadn't. I knew of it. I was familiar with it, but I didn't actually like sit down and play through the whole thing until we started talking about this movie. So that was my first time actually playing the whole thing. But what got me into it or the sort of so I worked with Gary Dauberman on Annabelle Creation. He wrote that movie, and then after, you know, the first Shazam movie, I was like, I want to do another horror movie. But there was no time because like, oh, we have to do Shazam 2, you know, before the kids grow up, and like, okay, we've got to go and do that. And then after like a few years of Shazam, it was like, I really want to do a horror movie. Like, I have to do one now. But then it was like, okay, well, what kind of horror, you know, do I want to do, you know, like slasher or monster or whatever. And then Gary contacted me and sent over the script for this. And it was like, well, this is like every genre in one movie. So it's like, I have to do this. And it wasn't actually like the full script at the time because it was right before the writer's strike. So it was like 60 pages or something, like with half a script and then sort of a description of where it all goes or how it ends. But that's when I sort of, started playing the game and really getting into that. So I was familiar with it, but it wasn't until then that I really like played it. It's really cool. I really thought it was, I mean, the fun thing about the game is that you can replay it, make different choices and see different deaths and everything. And I thought this was a really cool way of bringing that into a movie, that sort of replaying it. And I also like that it was sort of a new installment in the Until Dawn universe rather than trying to, you know, squeeze down 10 hours of game into 2 hours of movie and like recasting, you know, because I mean the game had like Rami Malek and all these great actors in it that are now too old to do the same thing.
Yeah. As you and Gary were kind of working on the script, did you try to incorporate the butterfly effect element? And I'd want to go back and watch it again to see how this functions in it. But using vague terms and no spoilers, what always made that game so special is tiny little decisions that you would make. And it was something so small of like, do you go have a cigarette with this character or do you go have a coffee with this character? Do you shoot the squirrel or not? Like just little things like that would have these massive impacts later. And so did you try to bring that into the game in an element as the world's kind of repeating itself?
Not really beyond just like each night being different. And so it's not like Groundhog Day where you're like, oh, well, every night the killer jumps out of this bush over here. So I'm just going to go this way instead. You know, like it had that unique aspect of like, oh, you never actually know what's going to come next because every night is different, even though it starts over.
Yeah, I mean, the bad version of that is when the mortality of the characters is like they're all immortal and there's no stakes. Like when things repeat. And what I liked about this is it's not predict. You made each character's potential life cycle different. We don't know how many times you can survive this pattern. There's choices like that that create a very interesting stakes to me.
Yeah, it could have easily been that thing of like, where they could, well, they'll just kill themselves and start over. And they have a little bit of that thinking in the movie before they're sort of realizing that, well, we can't go on dying because we start like, it actually wears you down and you start changing. So it's not like you come back refreshed, like in Groundhog Day or whatever. It's like, you only have a limited amount of time.
Did you bring anything from, so let's, a script is being generated and then you're playing the game. Did you bring anything from playing the game back to the script, like you yourself, not so much the writers, like was there quality to playing it that gave you a different approach to even making it? Like, I'm just curious if they.
I mean, there was little moments I wanted to get in there. Like, we added that there's a scene with a red light going on and off where she's sort of hiding from a Wendigo and the Wendigo's peeking out over her shoulder. That's sort of straight from, like, I wanted to have that moment from the game where you have to remain still. So you can't move the controller, you know, because then they see you and they get you. So it's like, oh, we got to have a moment like that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good one. So I love talking to people who are working in kind of bigger IP because I find that there's always some things that the IP is like, you have to preserve this. And you've done this a lot, like with Annabelle, you were walking into an established franchise and Shazam. Yeah. Was there something that the PlayStation people were like, okay, this is what needs to be preserved going in?
Well, Peter Stormare, who plays Dr. Hill, I mean, that was a whole thing where they were very, I mean, we for sure wanted him to be in the movie, to be the sort of the connection between the game and the movie, and also being big fans. But I think PlayStation were really adamant, like, no, he has to be in the movie. I think the Sony studio was maybe not as adamant, but PlayStation was like, no, it got to be him.
And I love that. I think that's amazing that that's the ride or die.
Yeah.
On so many different IPs, like there's always, you know, like, oh no, you have to do this particular thing. And yeah, that it's just got to have Peter Stormare in it. I think that's wonderful.
If I see Peter in a gas station, I know this trouble.
Another thing was the violence. I mean, it was very important for me, especially because the game gets pretty brutal and gory. So like, you can't do like, oh, but the movie is going to be PG-13 or something like that. And it felt like we always had PlayStation in our corner there too. Like, no, that's, the movie has to like go there because that's the game.
Well, I'm curious about that because, again, let's talk about practical effects and gore. One on the plus side, your movie is timing outside the fact that gaming movies and things are, you know, doing really well right now, but also the rise of gore coming back, you know, from Terrifier and things like that. It's I take it quite seriously because it's not the same as torture porn. It's actual the gore effects and wanting to see these practical things time very well for a movie like this, in my opinion, because you're doing it on a big level, on a studio level with exciting results. So tell us a little bit about the crafting, your commitment to practical, working on the scale. And it doesn't sound like you had to convince them. So that's good.
No, I mean, for me, it was always been a dream to do it this way because I've since I was a little kid, I've watched horror movies and like read books about makeup effects and all these things and wanted to do it. But even with like Lights Out and Annabelle Creation, there isn't that much in it. There's supernatural movies and, you know, Lights Out was PG-13. So this was a chance to like, oh, really get to do all that, like full on like monster makeup and like gory deaths. And like, so I was like, oh, finally. It didn't really take convincing, but I mean, the way movies are made, a lot of things are just sort of expected that, well, that's going to be visual effects because sort of in the prep of the movie, when we're sort of doing the budget for visual effects and even like walking the locations with the studio people, it was like, well, that will have to be VFX, right? Like painting out that ceiling. It was like, no, we'll just shoot it this way, or we'll keep the lights off and do this. And, you know, whenever I talk about this, I want to be clear that I don't hate visual effects at all. I kind of love visual effects. But this has always been a dream to do a movie like this. And I do think, like you said, Elric, that it's sort of coming back in some ways. And I do think, you know, I have a lot of thoughts of sort of where the business is going and everything with AI and everything that's happening. And I think we are so close right now to anyone being able to do like Marvel type spectacle, you know, just on their computer at home and have have it look exactly the same. And I think in order to stand out from all that, you sort of have to kind of go back to like models or stunts or things that not everyone can do, you know, like I think that's why, you know, you want to go see Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise hanging off a plane because you know that, oh, he did that. He's crazy enough to do that. It's not just sort of created in post, you know. And again, there's visual effects in this movie. We paint out wires and do a lot of things and enhance things, but we wanted to try and take practical effect as far as we could, and then we had visual effects as backup if needed.
Well, I've never watched an effect. I've never watched a digital effect. I agree. Digital effects, I love how they can finish and perfect things versus be the effect. But I've never watched one and gone, whoa, how did they do that ever in my life? Ever.
A, right? visual effect.
So that's what I mean. And that's the difference. There's so many body horror moments that I can think of where I literally can't work out how somebody did something and it stays in your brain forever. And so there, and including this, there are, I don't really probably want to say what they are yet because they're probably not on the trailer, but there's a couple, you know, things that big moments that I know, you know, I know David knows which ones I'm talking about, but they are very exciting because you're left a bit like, oh, okay, then we're going here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we did things like we hired an amputee double, you know, for a character who loses a leg. And
that makes so much sense now.
Because it's like, I mean, you could sort of paint it out, you know, use the actual actress. But I figured like, well, I mean, when we shoot the actress from the front, we'll keep the camera low and keep her leg hidden. And then from the back, it's a double who only has one leg. And it was funny with like all the brutal things we do in the movie. That was the one that sort of the crew reacted to the most, seeing her on the floor with the stump of a leg, you know, because it looks so real. I mean, I really enjoy that aspect of it. That's almost like designing a magic trick of like, okay, where can we hide cuts or where can we do things like this? And there's a scene in a bathroom that goes very crazy.
Yeah.
It's my favorite scene in the movie because it's like, that one turned out exactly the way I had imagined it. And that like never happens on a movie because there's always like, well, you know, problems or like compromises you have to make. But that one turned out perfectly. And it's just done by cutting. Mm. You know, you cut from a person to a dummy. And like it worked flawlessly.
But you're editing it on the same image, right? So you're not cutting away to anything. So the edit's happening imperceptibly, right?
A locked camera, and then
a locked camera, and then we add a little bit of camera float in post, so it looks, you know, doesn't look static. But that's it. So already on the day, you know, we could, as soon as we shot it, we just spliced it together and looked at it on the monitors. It's like, yep, it's working.
That's great. Oh my
God. But we had to shoot that scene last, which I was like sort of bummed about because I was so eager to do it. But we had to shoot it last because it like really destroyed the set. There was blood and stuff everywhere, and like I kept the prop, the guest book from the movie, but it's like covered in blood now because it, you know,
that's awesome.
Because of that scene.
Did you also keep your cameo?
The poster.
The poster.
I was also the tall guy in the mask in the found footage sequence in the hallway. Uh-huh. That was me.
This is such an egg-heady question, but it makes me giddy. Because you directed what I'm going to call a single-day horror film, which is where the day your entire horror film begins and stops within the same day, how many costumes did you have to have for each one?
For Clover, she had the most. It was 90 sets.
Different looks, yeah.
And sort of samey looks as well. But it was hard just to source like 90 of everything.
90? So why I asked. Because we, when I did Glorious, it's same day, we had, it was 27 different looks. One of those. And so we were looking at like 60 some shirts and we had to buy 60 of the same shirts. So that's why I was curious.
Yeah, and it was actually hard to like find, you know, 90 of certain things. So some things we had to recreate, like, okay, this is what we want, but now we have to sew and make those things so we have enough of them. And it was just like, yeah, I mean, you needed backups for like, even things like the rain wall. Whenever, you know, Clover goes into the rain wall, well, now she's just soaking wet. So if you need another take, I mean, there was one day it was set up wrong because, again, I wanted to do everything practical. So that's a real rain wall and like rain towers and everything. And one day it was sort of set up wrong. So as soon as she walked up to it, before we were even like rolling, she got wet and it's like, God damn it. Because now we have to send her away, dry her hair and like put on new clothes. And, you know, so that was the big challenge with trying to do everything practical, that you only get like one shot most of the time. And if it doesn't work, then you're screwed. So when shooting some of these things, we would like start out with shooting a clean plate for like, well, in case the practical doesn't work, then we'll have to do CGI or visual effects. but and then give it a try and like hope that, okay, it better work.
Yeah. So where did you shoot, knowing now that you're like constructing a rain wall outside? Where
shot
were you shooting?
In Budapest, where because that's where you get most for your money when it comes to building things. So you know, that Welcome Center was built, the witch's house, and the gas station we built, which was kind of funny because the gas station was like right next to the big house. So we had to shoot the gas station first and try to avoid seeing the Welcome Center in the background and then tear it down so we didn't see it in any of the other shots. And the great thing about Budapest as well, that we shot in some actual locations, like the tunnels at the end were these tunnels underneath Budapest.
Those are real tunnels?
Yes.
Mm. Wow.
It was really cool because in some shots you sort of see the breaths from people because it's so cold down there. Even we shot in the middle of summer and it was so hot, but down there it was freezing. But we got so much like production value out of just those tunnels. And you know, we didn't even have to add that much to some of them.
Is it true that Peter Stormare was just working in Hungary and you just stumbled upon him in the gas station? Yeah. Hey, it's Peter Stormare. Let's get him in a movie. It's the guy from Fargo.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been wanting to work with him since Lights Out, actually. I tried to get him to play. I wanted him to play the dad who gets killed at the beginning of Lights Out. But the studio was like, he can't play a family, like a loving father. Like, he's a creepy guy, you know. Yeah. He plays like Russian villains and things like that. So they turned that down. But for this one, it's like, well, he's in the game. We have to have him. And so I wrote him a letter in Swedish because he's, and you know,
yeah,
since we're both Swedes, and then talked about like, oh, you're like a hero of mine, want to work with you, been wanting to work with you for 10 years. And he was like, oh, you're Swedish, you know, we can talk shit about everyone on set and they won't know. And, the funny thing is about him, actually, it's like he plays all these creeps and scary guys, but he's like, in real life, he's the sweetest guy and he loves Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
So he shows up in like his Hello Kitty backpack and stuff like that.
Wow.
And he's like the least threatening person ever.
Have you taken him to the new Hello Kitty cafe here in LA? Because I feel like you need to. That
I didn't even know that there was one. I mean, I'm sure he's there all the time.
You know, there's one in Vegas. They just opened up one in Universal City Walk, and they have really good cupcakes. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Wow, that's the whole thing. I'm also curious about the and this might be fully baked out for the game itself, right? But the lore. How much lore and myth building had to be done for each of the different types of creatures in terms of what are the rules of what they can and cannot do? How much of that was just presented to you, or how much did you guys have to create for the film?
I mean, the things we really take from the game are the Wendigos and Psycho. But Psycho is like, he's not the same Psycho as in the game. So that was one thing with the design as well. Because in the game, he has this mask that is sort of a Halloween mask that looks like it's broken and like the skinless teeth is in the front. So, but I was like, oh, so in this movie, maybe it's like almost as if that mask in the game was based off of this character, because this character actually has a broken mask where you actually see the sort of skinned mouth. But otherwise, I mean, like the witch and some of the other things were made up for the movie.
Mm, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, but you knew you had to still work out what they're capable, like what your Wendigos are capable of compared to. I mean,
yeah, we had to change them a little bit on the game because, again, I insisted on trying to do everything as practical as possible, because in the game they have these really long limbs and they look really cool.
They're spindly and they walk kind of hunch, like it's a very particular walk.
They kind of move supernaturally fast as well. Like they're in one place and they're suddenly in another place.
Spider-like, and they can it's almost teleporting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was hard to do practically. So, I mean, what we did was we tried to hire as tall and skinny people as we could, and we hired these dancers from Budapest, because I figured, well, they'll know how to move their bodies in interesting ways. Mm. But they are a little different from the game because we wanted to do them practically.
Mm-hmm.
How did it feel coming back to horror? I mean, like, just for you personally, being in that world after, you know, doing two back-to-back superhero films, big films, how did it feel to be back in that?
I mean, it was great to like, you can kill everyone. you can brutally kill them and over and over again. No, it was really nice because like, I do love horror and I do love sort of, you know, it's more sort of restrained in the Shazam movies where, I mean, some people have been sort of critical, like, hey, it gets pretty brutal in Shazam, like in the boardroom scene where they're like eating people and whatever. But I mean, even in kids' movies, I love that stuff because a kid, I loved like Gremlins and, you know, stuff like that.
Bring back the tween horror. Man, I'm still, it's such a push. But yes, that's still, I feel like we need more of it everywhere.
And horror comedies. Mm-hmm. I wish that was, studios are so afraid of that because they're like, well, they don't work.
They don't sell overseas is what I always hear. Comedy doesn't translate to, you know, different markets. And it's heartbreaking. And but then I'm going to talk about it at the top of the show. Dead Talent Society, which was absolutely hilarious. It was a Netflix dump. It won like Fantastic Fest and a bunch of other festivals, but it was just very unceremoniously dumped to Netflix last week.
I missed the title. What was this?
Dead Talent Society.
Dead Talent Society. Okay.
And it's Taiwanese. And it was just like, comedy translates. What the hell? Like, it totally translates. I don't buy that.
I think they're just harder to pull off
horror movies, which is like, you know, which I consider Until Dawn to be, and sort of other horror movies I've done as well. Like, there were sort of a fun time, you know, where it's, you know, even though it's not a full on comedy in any way.
Yeah, 100%. I miss popcorn horror, is what I've always termed it. Like, the ones that it's just like, it's fun. And this one definitely had like that cabin in the woods vibe of kind of being aware of the devices, but still making it super fun in that. So
I found it more scary than Cabin in the Woods gets so meta. This to me isn't actually a meta movie. I think it has a hook the way Final Destination, and there's repetition, which is itself meta. But I never feel like are winking to about movies or winking, which Cabin in the Woods is obviously that's what it's about. I think this, I mean, Becca jumped two times as big as I've seen you jump, like when in the first Smile, she had a couple of guys. So there's two where she shuddered back in the and I was like, oh, and that makes me jump usually. If she's jumping,
you jump. No, it's true.
They were good jumps. So it's effective. So I think that's harder to do if you get too meta. So I think it's more like it's got a playful, structural, obviously that's built into the conceit of the movie, which again, what's so cool is that I'm sitting watching a movie having no clue at that first point that's what kind of movie I'm about to watch. I mean, I started to wonder when I see a clock and the Sands of Time and stuff, but I didn't know that. And it was a pretty, I know most people have seen the trailer though, so they won't quite get that experience, but.
Yeah, I gotta say first, I'm impressed that Elric counts my number of jumps per movie. I'm gonna make you do that from now on because I know like, no matter how much horror I watch in my life, I still jump and I love that.
Yeah,
and as soon as I quit, I need to find a new job.
You don't want to be desensitized. That's boring.
Smile and Smile 2 were definitely the most I have in a while, but I did definitely hit two times. But you know what was hilarious is right next to me, we should have asked what outfit she worked for.
That's right,
There was another journalist sitting next to us and she was like, I was assigned this. I don't do horror well. And she told us that at the top. She was like, I really just can't watch horror movies. And she kept talking to us like I do on airplanes where I'm trying to get people around me to, you know, occupy my brain. So she was, so do you guys like horror? Like she was talking to us a lot. But then because I'm sitting next to her through the movie, I'm gradually watching her sink down into the seat through the entire film. It was just eating her alive. And that was beautiful.
Yeah. I'm curious sort of what non-horror people would think of this movie because it is very much a movie for horror.
It is. But I could also see them having a good time because it's got a fun hook, you know.
And it's a fun hook outside of the video game because even like I love the Silent Hill movies, but they are made so much richer by having played the game. I can't imagine going into them not having experienced the game because I feel like I'd be like, why are there like nurses with bandages on their faces and things like that?
I saw the Silent Hill movie without having played the game. I'd only seen a little bit of it. And I was like, that worked for me.
Still effective. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Let's go. This one definitely would work without the game. And I feel like it's enhanced with it. So, which is awesome. But I wanted to ask before we end, since you are a horror fan, what are you currently watching? Anything good? Anything that you've been obsessed with? It can be old or new.
I, I actually saw your movie, Eldrick, The Dead Thing, a little while ago, and really liked it. Same thing there.
Speaking of popcorn horror. No, I'm kidding.
but same thing there, because I knew nothing about it. Okay. I knew you'd made it. Uh-huh. So it was like the reveal and the it really worked for me.
We did it pretty well. Even in the trailer, we didn't reveal. I won't reveal it now, but you know.
Nothing.
We did reveal that part because you don't have much to work with when you're making a movie that low budget and that story. Yeah. When your story's that kind of like, so I feel you have to protect certain things even more if you can, you know.
No, it was great. And then you've done some, like, there was some film emulation or something you did, right? Because it looked very like filmy.
Yeah. I mean, we did work hard to try to make, we did make a film print afterwards, but the what you would be watching is not from the film print. Yeah. We showed it at the NewBev on 35. It was pretty crazy. And it looked really.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And now I can't watch it digitally because once I've seen it on film, I'm like, oh, that's how I always want to look at it. But I appreciate you watching.
Film print?
We have it. One of the people who paid for it in our production group is storing it because he paid for it. It was only $5,500 to make a 35 millimeter print of a feature film.
Oh, wow.
Pretty cheap.
That's not bad.
Yeah. I think it used to be like 45,000, so people don't do it. But it seems like now things are changing. But I appreciate you checking it out.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'm really behind. I still haven't seen Smile 2, which I hear great things about. I haven't seen The Monkey. I saw Companion, which is kind of horror, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, we considered it so.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. No, but otherwise, I have a lot of catching up to do now that I've finished this movie.
Yeah.
Just gonna, take some time off and just watch a lot of horror.
Will you get to stay in that world? Will you get to make another horror? Is that where you're, or are you just going to see how this goes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open for any cool opportunities, you know, but I do love horror and I want to do more horror. And I think I work best almost like with limitations because like when we were doing like the found footage stuff in this movie, that was very much sort of like, it wasn't prioritized because, you know, you have to focus on like the actual scenes that like tie together. And then with the found footage stuff, it was just sort of like, oh, well, okay, on this day, you have these three actors. Like, because you probably noticed that they're not all in the found footage stuff. Yeah. So it was kind of an improvising of like, okay, we have these two actors and we have like these props. Let's go get like the severed arm and put that on the floor. And like, I really love doing that kind of thing. So at some point, I want to do something like really, you know, indie kind of just to see what it is, what that's like.
That's what you're most famous for. I mean,
I was going to say, remember your short films? That's what it's like.
I would love to do a feature with that kind of feel and that kind of making it that way.
Well, I bring it up because I had my computer plugged in at school and I'm teaching 20-year-olds and the email came through that you were going to do an interview. So like from a publicist said, had your name. And one of my 20-year-olds was like, oh my God, is that David Sandberg? I learned filmmaking from all his videos before I came to school. Yeah. And that's a while ago now, you know? So when we first met you, that was still fairly fresh because you were doing Lights Out the film. So the fact that there's still 20-year-olds, that's why they're knowing you from these, it's really cool. It's like cool that you could go back to that and hand make a movie, you know?
No, I will say the exact same thing because I'm at USC and one of the very first classes I teach with my graduate student is on short filmmaking because that's what they're about to make their entire career at USC is short film after short film. And I always open by, okay, what are some of your favorite short films that you've seen online? And inevitably, Lights Out is said every single time. So it still holds that kind of zeitgeist fervor that it did, you know, a while ago. So it's stuck with those kids and
that's has awesome.
Made them horror fans.
Yeah. No, I want to do more short films as well. And just, you know, it's so fun to like, I really love the sort of ingenuity of it, like working within limitations and different things like that, because it sort of, it feeds your creativity.
There is something, I mean, as much as I bitched and moaned about it at the time, and Elric did as well, there is something kind of freeing to say, how do I set an entire film in my house? Or how do I set an entire film in Elric's case, my office? You know, there is something that kind of gets, that you have to really get ingenious about, like, you know, that you really are trying to get, like next level, like how do you make it ascend from what it actually is? So
limitations. I gotta ask you before we go, what about Sweden? Have you thought about making a feature? Like, is that ever a draw to make a horror film in Sweden or a story set in the home? I think about it a lot with New Zealand. So I'm always just in my brain going, huh, what would I make there that would be different, you know?
What's the tax incentive like? Should we all go to Sweden?
It's terrible. Which is why no movies are made in Sweden. No, I would love to do a Swedish movie because I've never done that.
Yeah.
I've never done a movie in my native tongue, you know. I would love to. I've sort of, you know, every now and then production companies over there do get in touch. And sort of up until now, I've been like, well, if I do a Swedish movie, that means I'm not doing a U.S. movie. And with a U.S. movie, you get, you know, access to, I mean, you get a bigger budget, you get paid more, you get like access to like so many great actors. And like, so it's like, oh, well, then I have to sort of not do that. But now I'm leaning more and more into like, I have to do it at some point.
Do it in between two big things, you know?
Yeah. And then, I mean, you kind of want to do something that you couldn't do here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think you'd really have to take advantage of that, do something different.
Yeah, more personal. I mean, the cool thing is there's stories that you're not consciously think about from your childhood. And that's what I think about. It's cool about having somewhere to go back to, even if you never get to do it. It's nice to have it in the.
Yeah. And there's, you know, Sweden's an old country with weird old mythology of like sort of Norse creatures in the woods and trolls and things like that. So, you know, there's some cool.
And there haven't been many. I mean, like, obviously you have like nightmare movies by Bergman, some of his art, but they're not horror. He probably isn't calling them horror movies per se, even though they're, but like in terms of pure genre, I can't think of many that I've seen from that.
No, it's like Let the Right One In is the big sort of,
it's a total,
the big one. But I think that was also made because I think he was sort of the boss of Swedish television's drama thing, or so. I think he was able to do that because he was.
And it says
that's what it takes to get that made. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that is so
a lot of movies in Sweden are movies because it's, you know, it's not a huge country, so they have to make movies that the most people will go see, and that's either kids' movies or like detective movies or shows. You know, so you can't be very like. You know, narrow.
Yeah.
Was Troll Hunter Swedish?
Norwegian.
Norwegian. So, okay. Apologies.
No. I mean, it's, you know.
Mountain snow. It felt.
And it's all, I mean, everything over there is a co-production. It's always like Denmark, Sweden, Norway sort of pooling money together. And then that's why like, oh, this character in the Swedish movie is Danish for, you know, because we've got to get that Danish actor in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was about to ask the same thing about The Hatchling, but I have a feeling that's probably in the same sense.
No, I don't even know which one that is.
Have you not The Hatchling? It came to.
Yeah, it was more of an indie one. Yeah, it was.
I'm good. It's Finnish. It's Finnish. I just looked it up. There we go. Yeah. But it does look like a co-pro. Yes. That tracks.
We could continue to chart that region right now if you guys want.
Right like, now, if you need
because we haven't touched Oslo. Let's talk about Edvard Munch and art. And I think that I would personally love to see at some point you do that. Just because there are so many little countries all over the map that I feel like it's a bummer we don't see what their visions of the version of the movie, the stories we all love would be. Usually there's one or two, but even New Zealand, I don't feel has made a truly balls to the wall, scary, like a movie that's trying to disturb, shock and terror. Like usually it's more like, it's more intense.
They're funny.
Yeah. Funny or intense. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's about all.
Yeah. No, I've been excited. Estonia has been throwing down for the last couple of years. Like I'll take that. Yeah, so we need some Sweden.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, David. So this does not come out this weekend. It comes out the following, correct?
Yes, the 25th.
The 25th. Okay, so y'all mark your calendars for the 25th. You're definitely going to want to see this one in a theater.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because this is massive and the effects and the gore are crazy and the monsters are crazy. This is very much a theatrical film. Yeah. So make sure to get there that first weekend to see this.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for episode 100, David.
Episode 100. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. And for more horror goodness in between our Colors of the Dark show, you can head over to our Patreon, Deep Cuts, where Elric and I stash all the really weird, hard to find stuff that we watch throughout the week. So yeah, head over there. And otherwise, we will be back in 2 weeks with a really exciting one. We'll be right back.
quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary, not valid for McDelivery.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.